Blog Talk Radio.
Do you know God has called you? Do you know your purpose? Let us help you get on cue.
I learned more about the heart of leadership than the art of leadership. What Eric Powell does in this session is make the leader in you come alive.
Welcome to the show. You're listening on Q. I'm your host, Eric Powell. Thanks for joining us. Friends, no matter if you are the mother or the child or the writer or the singer, no matter the role, you have a purpose. You are a leader in that purpose. And our goal here is simple, to help, to equip and inspire leaders to leave where they are. In other words, get us on Q with God's will, on Q with his calling on our lives, which is our purpose, and on Q with others who get others on cue with that purpose. You know, what is cue? It is how Nehemiah, a model transformational leader, led a starved, desperate, broken, isolated people in building a wall around ancient Jerusalem. In a sense, also building a way of life. He C-U-E them up. C-U-E is acronym for cue. C is for common ground. It's what we can agree on. It's the why we're coming together. U is unified thought. It's what vision can we share. It's what we intend to do and to accomplish. And E is equally yoke. It's what is the how. What is the game plan? What's my role in it? What's success look like? All of these things integrate into Q leadership, which is leverages biblical principles of leadership, using Nehemiah as an example, as a model, in order to help you do two things. One, get people to trust you. And two, get people to follow you. And in our perspective, that is the axis, true axis of what leadership is. Can I get you to trust me, and can I get you to follow me? So as we always do, we want to start our show with our prayer. So, Lord, you are merciful, powerful, loving God. We thank you for this day, Lord. Lord, lead and bless this ministry and our audience and all that are serving you. Lord, we know that this Q leadership is your brainchild and our calling in your name. We honor you today by doing two things. One, giving you the glory, and two, serving this generation through Q. So, Lord, your word says in Romans 12:2, be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is good and acceptable and perfect will of God. Lord, use this ministry to complete that purpose, to align and equip and transform to new leaders in your glory. Help others hear the call, receive the call, and let's raise some transformational leaders and some gatekeepers in your name. In Christ's name we pray. Amen. So our show is all about a lot of things, but what we try to do is have a dialogue, a conversation about leadership based in God's word. We try to equip leaders with a roadmap, a tap into faith in order to building those two things, building trust and building discipleship. And we try to highlight everyday leaders who are making a difference that can testify to God's goodness in their lives and those they impact and where they're being transformational. Our show is a lot of things, but our show is not to criticize but shine some light on some truth and in love. Not to tell you what to do, but provide a different lens in order to see things. And it's not to focus on the mere symptoms of a problem, but get to the root of the problem. What we say is try to treat the infection rather than the runny nose. So today, especially today, as with any day, let's be open. And let's pray that we hear the Lord and not me. We have the right questions. And no matter what the differences that may be, remember that this life is about love and surrender. And there will be definitely a difference of opinions based on today's topic, but let us do what a true transformation leader says. Let us agree without being disagreeable and be thought partners in solving and having a fruitful dialogue. So this weekend, we're celebrating the 4th of July, our nation's independence. I'm sure that we all celebrate with our families in our own ways. Some good cookouts. I smoked a brisket and some ribs, even though I don't eat pork, but I, you know, become a cholesterol, those types of things. But I smoked them for my family. We had some fireworks. I'm sure everybody has enjoyed some ball games. And even before I left on Friday for a family funeral, we enjoyed a parade in Arlington, Texas. And the theme was that parade was ingenuity. It was about the freedom to explore your imagination and create new things, the freedom to think differently and think smarter, freedom to explore your gifts in such a way that brings on new thoughts and new things, freedom to export your skills and your resources to make our world a better place, and freedom to be original, and also freedom to inspire a vision of something. You know, we saw some of this ingenuity on display from our floats that designed from a Zumba dance floor that's going across the street into a float modeled like pirate ships. We saw some of this ingenuity from bike clubs who designed and built their own custom bikes to a science club who powering go-karts with advanced biofuels made from gasified coal, which I was very, very excited to see about. And we saw ingenuity in groups showing their patriotism by honoring God and country. And we saw a group, an atheist group, displaying their signs of patriotism by saying that they're patriots and not believing in God. You know, although I disagree with them, but it was freedom. It was the freedom that many in our country in generations before had paid for. There are many that died to protect that freedom of expression. You know, what is freedom? Just think about how do we define freedom? You know, where is it found? Who needs it? Who determined who needs it? What guarantees it? Does it go beyond just the Bill of Rights we have in the Constitution, or are there limits on freedom? Is freedom free? You know, we're kicking off our freedom series. Over the next few weeks, we'll attempt to answer some of that. And the key to for me, because of the Lord has had me in Galatians 5 over the last few weeks on the topic of freedom, and the freedom that is in Jesus Christ. And I take us through this series and this important topic of freedom and related topics like life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, or let freedom ring, and other things that you may like to discuss. And so we'd love to hear from you on that definition of freedom over the next few weeks. So feel free to inbox me on Q Radio on our Facebook page, On Q Radio, or email at onqradio@qleadership.org. So I hope that you enjoyed your Independence Day, and I hope that you, some of us probably sang the Star Spangled Banner once or twice this weekend, and hope that you thank someone who's in the military, or hope that you hug someone who's marched or secured some freedoms from generations before. You know, if you don't realize that America is quite a young nation. It is one of the youngest nations in the world, only 238 years old. Hopefully I'm doing my math right there, as compared to places like nations like Israel, Egypt, China, where centuries and centuries of years old. With all the faults, with all its history, with all its tribulations, all its triumphs, America still remains the land of promise, a beacon of light in the world. Some of us may debate it, maybe on that fact, but as long as there are people who are willing to do anything to cross a border, to cross a shore, America remains a beacon of light for those. When people are willing to sacrifice everything to come, to live, to secure a future for the next generation, or to secure freedom, America remains a beacon of light. That sacrifice is on display today with the recent news that's splashed across the headlines with the undocumented or unaccounted for children that have been sent from Central America. There's almost over 50,000 kids who have been sent to America, and there's quite a debate going on right now. In 2002, President Bush signed a human trafficking law, which was authorized again in 2008 by President Obama with some additional protections. The law said that unaccompanied children from Mexico caught at the border are automatically returned without formal deportation proceedings because the two countries, America and the U.S., share a border. That's the stipulation. But the unaccompanied children from El Salvador, Honduras, and Guatemala, and other Central American countries cannot be sent back without going through the deportation process, since the law ensured that America wouldn't send kids back to a dangerous situation. And for instance, Honduras, for example, experienced a lot of gang violence throughout its territory, and so there's been incredible proof in order to share that. Some of these Central American kids are given basic care like medical screening proceeding centers before being placed before relatives or foster care and to appear in front of an immigration judge. So I think President Obama recently authorized Congress to authorize a couple billion dollars to speed a deportation process of some unaccompanied children. The funds are to eliminate delays in deporting these children and give some additional powers to Homeland Security and essentially trying to sustain border security as some of the drug-related issues come along the way. But there's a lot of facts around that. So this is setting off its own set of fireworks, if you will, around this 4th of July holiday. Everyone is asking, should we deport them or should we let them stay? But before we get to that, but can you imagine the circumstances, the despair, the hope that would drive a parent to send their child unaccompanied with the hopes of saving them? Can you imagine sending your kid just off in the river on the tube or somewhere on the truck or train just to get to a place to have a better life? You know, risking and sacrifices in search for a better life, in search for freedom, in search for promise, that in a sense is inscribed on our Statue of Liberty. And as the inscription says, give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send me these, the homeless, the tempest tossed to me, and I lift my lamp beside the golden door. That's what's inscribed on the Statue of Liberty. And there has been no better way of expressing that freedom that's on the Statue of Liberty. So the question is, one of the questions is, does this remain true today? Is the Golden Gate open for anyone in the world, especially for these unaccompanied children of Central America? Would they, too, sing the Star Spangled Banner one day? Which brings us to the question of the day. These unaccompanied children in America, oh, say, can kids stay? That's our question of the day. Can they stay? So helping us with this is including our regular guest, the Smith brothers, who's always raising the consciousness and providing a voice to the world, to those who are in need, and always try to operate in theater of ideas. You heard them before many times on the show, and they will always have interesting comments and feedback and perspectives on the see things. And also helping us is you. So please call us at 310-861-2331, and after the break, we will bring on the Smith brothers, and we'll bring you on as well as we kick off our conversation about unaccompanied in America, Oh Say Can Kids Stay. So during the break, feel free to give us calls and share your thoughts. And what we're going to try to do, we're going to share some renditions of the Star Spangled Banner, and we're going to hopefully give you some feedback on which one you think are the best ones. And so this is On Cue. I'm your host, Eric Powell. We'll be right back.
When you make a classic out of the national anthem, you got to be something. And Marvin was something. He was really, really something.
I felt that singing it with that kind of music as the background gave me an inspiration, and I asked God that when I sang it, would he let it move men's souls?
Can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleam? And Christ through the perilous fight, oh Lord, oh the fight, oh the rampart we watched was so gallant. Yeah.
Thanks for staying with us. You're listening on Q. I'm your host, Eric Powell. Remember, our mission here is simple, to help you leave where you are by getting you on cue with God's will and his purpose. That was Marvin Gaye, and great voice, great rendition, and something that hopefully stirred the souls of those who listened to his song as he wanted to do. So today's question of the day is Unaccompanied America. Oh, say can kids stay? Helping us with that question is our regular guest, Smith Brothers, both who are always raising the consciousness and providing a voice to the world, always operating in the theater of ideas, and also helping us with you. So feel free to call us at 310-861-2331 and press 1 on your telephone or log into our live chat room and share what's on your mind. And so once you press 1, Dorota Kennedy can bring you in, and we can have a dialogue as well. Welcome to log in as well as call us, again, the number 310-861-2331. So we want to say welcome to the Smith Brothers once again. It's been a couple months since they've been on. So, Nehemiah, Jock, how are you?
Doing good.
Happy 4th. Did you get your short sets? You know, come on. You act like you don't know what that is, right? But
I know what that is.
I know. But hey, welcome once again. You know, you guys have been on a few times, and you know, I've always asked to start the show about that one question, the first couple questions. But I just wanted to, Nehemiah and Jock, just share with the audience, remind us of what that one word is described, both of you. Nehemiah, what's your one word?
For.
Say that one more time.
I didn't understand the question. What were you saying?
That I would always start the show mm-hmm. always ask what's that one word that describes you. And you've been on a few times. You said it over a period of time. So I want to remind the audience what that one word is that describes you.
I don't know. I think it changes. I think it's seeker.
Seeker. Okay.
Seeker.
And John, what about you?
Perseverance.
Perseverance. We're great for that. You know, as you know, we're celebrating the birth of our nation and over 238 years, I believe. And, you know, I want to start off with a question for you before we jump in really the big topic. What is freedom? What is freedom in your mind? Anyone, you can jump in and answer that.
Go ahead, Nehemiah.
Well, I mean, for me, freedom is one person's ability or to express themselves in a way that is constructive to the greater society or for the greater good.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, for me, that's freedom, being to take what you have gleaned from your experiences and being able to add that to the collective, that the collective might grow and be better.
Right, taking your experiences and add it to the collective.
Mm-hmm.
Be better.
And through that, then others can perhaps look at your mistakes as well as your successes, and through some vicarious means understand how to proceed in their own lives. And so that's why, you know, it's very important to me to live the Christian life, because Jesus gave us a blueprint, and you see the little, you know, bands that say, "What would Jesus do?" I think that people a lot of times don't really truly understand what that implies. What would Jesus do? You know, and I think that if you ask that question of yourself on a daily basis, you look at what Jesus added to the collective, and you grow from that, and then you help others to grow. So for me, that is freedom. You find
that is freedom. So in a way of using being on purpose, in a sense, and collectively in order to impact people for His glory, and also provide that roadmap in order, that testimony, if you will. I know I'm stretching your words there, but essentially in order to share and move people from one condition to the other. I definitely align with that. You know, as we're talking about today, the unaccompanied children coming to America from Central America, and that's really the big subject of today, as we know. Jock, what is those few words that you think about? What would you think about this when you saw this? What's that one word to kind of describe what you think's going on?
The one word that describes what's going on. I don't know if it's here's one thing that needs to happen.
Okay.
So there must be a calibration. Okay.
Okay.
There has to be a calibration first.
Okay.
Before we say that we're going to render our opinions on what's happening now.
Sure.
So
let's talk about the calibration.
You and I talked about.
Let's talk about the calibration.
You and I talked.
Calibrated, bro.
I have. Calibration is what we must all understand here, except for the indigenous people to this country, is that there is some form of illegality to all of our existence here in this nation.
Come on, bro.
Okay, so say more about
it.
So what do you mean by
it? I mean, the fact that we're having this conversation on the 4th of July or around this time is really relevant. In that, you know, if you look at immigration in this country of all kinds, whether it was forced immigration, which is slavery, or whether it was immigration based on trying to escape a particular type of rule in our early times in this country, there was always some form of illegality there, right? I mean, those that came here who came here willingly first, a lot of them were considered to be abandoning their own nation, trying to start another. They did some illegal things once they got here. Those of us who were forcibly brought here, that was illegal within itself. And so if you're not an indigenous person of this nation, the calibration is we all must understand before we render an opinion on these children or peoples that we all have some type of illegality associated with our immigration to this.
You're saying that the calibration is confronting a reality in your mind that outside of those who are indigenous to the Native Americans, if you will, they are only legal residents of this country. Am I paraphrasing that in the right way?
You're paraphrasing it pretty much in the right way.
So let's
we have divided all, have created a nation.
Let's take that for a second. So, although there's some storied history in the U.S., there's a storied good and bad, and a lot of triumphs or a lot of tragedy. All those things are true in a big way. I'm not so sure I can go as far as say. You know, is illegal now? Are you saying that is still illegal, even though we put together institution in order to kind of bring this nation together? Help the audience with that.
Okay. My point is not to really look too much into it, We're just dealing with the fact, though, because a lot of what comes up is that, you know, the legality of this whole thing, right? And per our laws, a lot of the laws that have been devised in our nation, then if we look at this right now with the children, a lot of it's illegal, right? What I'm trying to say in saying that we need to calibrate first is we need to say, okay, at some time, okay, in our nation's history, our existence here or our immigration here was illegal, okay? There was a question of legality there, okay? So now when you calibrate yourself to that, then what you can do is you can take a look at it and say, okay, there's always going to be questions about legality in immigration, okay? Now,
you're not saying
that out of the way.
I want to calibrate the audience too. I want to calibrate the audience too. So you're not saying that as we stand as a nation that we're on illegal terms. What you're saying is that the calibration is understanding our past history. There has been instances of this in the past. Therefore, we need to allow the past to help inform the future. Am I saying that in the right way, or am I looking at a different way?
Exactly, exactly. That's exactly what I'm saying. And when you do that, Eric, when you do that, what you understand, what you have to grasp with now is what's the humanitarian issue? Okay, now that we got this whole legal thing out of the way and whether it's legal or whether it's illegal, what's the humanitarian issue here with the kids that are coming? Why are they coming? Why do parents feel like I can send my child on sending my child on a $2,500 mile trek, you know, to the U.S. At a cost sometimes double that, you know, and what I mean is $2,500 is sometimes $5,000 in American dollars to risk their safety. Risk their innocence, okay, and risk their future, okay, their possible future, in their lives. Why do those parents feel like that?
Yeah. So Nehemiah,
you know,
in your perspective, why do these parents? I know you're not there. Why would they feel this way?
Right.
Well,
you're asking me.
I'm asking Nehemiah.
Well, I think that, you know, my brother put it in humanitarian terms and legal terms, but what's happening here, and then I wonder what you asked, is that America, which has labeled itself a Judeo-Christian nation, saying God we trust and all this stuff, What bothers me is that if you're a Judeo-Christian, that means that the basis of what you believe is the Bible. We swear on it in court and in certain legal, our legal system is predicated on our swearing that we, on this sacred book that we will tell the truth, nothing but the truth, so help us God. Yet in that book, we want to put our hand on it, but we don't want to abide by it. In that book, I believe it was in Matthew, Christ says, suffer, in Matthew 19:14,
mm-hmm.
Jesus says, suffer the little children and forbid them not to come unto me, for such is the kingdom of heaven. So,
right.
Confused now. I'm confused that this Judeo-Christian nation is all of a sudden saying, no, we can't accept these children now.
Right.
And I think that you have parents that are saying that this is the place that these children can go and they can have a chance. Because here in this oppressive environment, in this oppressive milieu, they cannot know true growth and freedom. But here is a place that espouses that it is about freedom.
Yep.
And yet when the children hit the border, all of a sudden we are in an uproar and we are saying, wait a minute now, you can't come in here. You need to go back home. And yet we swear on the book that says, suffer the little children to come unto me and deny them not. See, we have to realize that in that book, at that time when Jesus said that, the disciples were saying, there were people who were sending their children to see Jesus.
Right, right.
I need to, look, go see Jesus. And the disciples said, no, man, get on away from here. This ain't for you. And Jesus had to stop them and say, wait a minute, man, unless you be like this child, you can't enter the kingdom of heaven. And so we are the one word, you asked about the one word that came to mind when you thought about what's going on with this, hypocritical.
Okay.
Is the word that comes to mind for me. Hypocritical. They're a bunch of hypocrites.
But are we?
America has continuously been a hypocrite. That's why I don't celebrate the 4th of July. I'm like Frederick Douglass. I asked the question. What to the American slave is the 4th of July? And if you read that particular speech, this particular issue becomes even more relevant. He wasn't just speaking to slavery. This thing speaks to the universality of freedom. And
okay.
Here you have people who are yearning to be free, and the Statue of Liberty is not holding the flame for them to get in. She's holding a flamethrower to keep them out.
So I get the notion about what condition we were when this country as a black people came about, when this nation came about. To celebrate the 4th is probably part of another conversation. We can go down that point. But regardless, mm-hmm. if we celebrate or not, America still remains that beacon of light, to the point of, as Christ was, not compare America to Christ, but to your analogy of parents sending kids to a place in order to secure their future. And so the whole notion about the hypocritical, though, that goes along all of us. None of us are exempt, Nehemiah. It's not just America. We just can't blast this America as this being hypocritical. Because we can go through the same notion, no matter what side of the aisle, the political aisle that we stand on, Democrat or Republican, or in the middle anywhere, we put our hands on our Holy Bible, but we still vote against things that go against the Word. So it's not just America. We are America. It is all of us have been hypocritical. I just want to make sure we make
that
point.
When I said America, that is everything that it entails. I didn't say Republican or Democrat. I said America. And
no, I'm just saying that you said that's why you don't celebrate the 4th of July. My point is all of us are not. All of us are part of that. No one's exempt. That's my only point.
Well, Eric, I have to disagree with that. The reason why, and you say we agree to disagree, and on this we're going to have to agree to this, and the reason why I disagree is that when you listen to the Star Spangled Banner, when you listen to these 4th of July speeches and what have you, just like my brother said earlier, you have to put this thing, you have to calibrate this thing. If we are celebrating the 4th of July, we are celebrating, July 4th, what, 1776, is that right?
That's correct.
That's correct. In 1776, how many black folk were free?
Oh, I get that.
We were still slaves.
Hold on, Nehemiah. As I said, we could go down that route. We won't go down that rabbit hole today because I know that could be a whole show in itself. And I get your point.
Yeah,
we agree
to
disagree point.
In order to
I understand.
Okay.
Hold on. I understand. I understand that we were not free. I understand that, and I understand that sentiment just like you do. But at the same time, move forward based upon where we are. I'm not going to change your perspective on that, and we're going to agree to disagree on that. Okay?
What I'm saying is...
Yeah.
So let me interject real quick. And so my thing is, I know we can go have a whole, show about that.
Yeah,
my
absolutely.
Point,
we can get
that
stuck
that
on that. I just don't want
to
get...
No,
my thing is... But here's my thing. My thing is to say, Now we are talking about a humanitarian issue, okay, about what's happening with these kids that are coming here now on their journey here, before they begin the journey, on their journey here, and after they get here. Okay.
Sure.
How can we address that issue, that one particular issue? And so I think one thing is, like you say at the beginning of the show, you know, is try to find not only the symptoms but the solutions, right?
Absolutely.
And so I think one of the ways to do that is to look at, okay, what would drive someone to leave or to send their children, for that matter,
their
home nation?
Oh. Right. What nation?
Because
the question still remains, Jock, through which lens are you looking at this humanitarian issue? Are you looking through the lens, through the American lens, which these people at the border that are trying to repel these people or that are trying to say that these people shouldn't be there? That's the American lens.
But at the question was around the parent's lens. What would drive a parent to send their kids to a nation to risk all things? The lens we're looking at right now from the parents, and that's what my question was to you more. What are they thinking? And that's what I want to talk about
now.
Before we go.
And so, here's real quickly. What we want to say is, one thing is, we know that there are social issues in these nations. I think the majority of these kids are coming from Guatemala, Honduras, and
mm-hmm.
El Salvador. Okay,
mm-hmm.
We know there's social issues, poverty, inequality, social issues like that. There are also that kind of feeds into economic issues. You have exploitation in these countries. By drug cartels, not only drug cartels, but what we consider legal companies going down there and exploiting these nations socially and economically. Then you also have environmental issues. A lot of these, I know a couple of these countries have problems with basic resources like water, you know, in a lot of these countries, you know, a good percentage of the water is contaminated, and that's caused by internal means, just the people not understanding, also by exploitation by international companies. So you got all kind of issues there, and then a lot of these countries don't have really stable governments. You know, so those are the things that are forcing these parents to say, "Hey, I gotta get my child out of here." If I can't get my child educated, if I can't get basic resources such as clean drinking water for my child, if I have to worry about violence, pervasive violence in my living environment, then I need to get my child out of here if I can't get out of here.
Yeah,
and
I agree with
problem,
you. And I think
right?
If you look at it from a general sense, it is what we talk about, a societal ecosystem. By the way, you got the economic piece, you got the political, you got the social and educational. All those are off-tilted, probably even more so than anywhere else, definitely outside of the U.S. But to your point, there are some conditions that drive parents in order to make this decision, this 1,200-mile trek, as you shared. But in a sense, it is finding a way to impact their future. And so to the point, I know there's always debate around what America is and what America is not. But these parents decided not to send them south, to South America anywhere, not to send them to Mexico. They bypassed
mm-hmm.
Mexico. They sent them to the U.S. And so although, yeah, we all
mm-hmm.
have challenges or differences, opinions of what America is, what isn't, but it's still a beacon of light to those people. And so that was my point of Does these parents understand, is it really saying that, you know, their purpose is really the future of their kids? They're willing to do whatever it takes to secure the future of the next generation. Is that what they're saying by this act, Nehemiah?
Well, I think they're saying the same thing that our poor parents said about making sure that we got an education, making sure that, they set the path for us, you know, for us to be successes and to be successful in this particular system. I think that black folk in this country can really relate to these people better than others and should, because we understand what was it that made the slave run away to the north where there was freedom, or to Canada where there was freedom, and then send money to buy his family out of slavery. All of those, that it's the same thing. There has to be something better than this. There has to be something better than this. And so I'm going to do what I have to. I'm going to risk my own life to make sure that I can get to somewhere where it's free and where I can raise enough money to buy my family out of the condition that they are in, if that's the way, the route I have to take, or to steal them out of slavery into freedom, you know. And so it is a type of slavery that is going on in South America. That when people are oppressed economically and socially, and they have very limited resources and can't get the education that they need, like Josh said, the natural resources that they need, like water or clean water, then that's a type of slavery. And so here's a place that they've heard about that say if you can just make it north, if you can just make it north, you can be free. And we should be able to relate to that, because our foreparents did the same thing. They were saying to themselves, if I could just make it north, if I could just make it to D.C. or to New York or to Canada, I'm free. And so I think more than anybody, we understand exactly what these people are going through. And it's sad in a way, but then in the same respect, I understand. I get it. I get it. And not because I had to do it, but because somebody did it for me, that I might be able to even sit here on this internet radio show and even talk about it.
Absolutely.
Somebody that I don't know, somebody that I've never heard of, somebody that was a slave, somebody that went through beatings and hosings and dogs and all this kind of stuff, did it, that I might have this opportunity.
Right. So we got history.
I can understand.
We got a lot of history in order to inform what we need to do now. And I think that's really the point of what we want to talk about today. So after the break, we'll come back and we'll continue our dialogue with the Smith brothers. And our question of the day is unaccompanied America. Oh, say, can kids stay? So during the break, feel free to give us a call at 310-861-2331. Chime into our dialogue or even come into our chat room and have a conversation with Kennedy. She can bring on your point if you choose not to come on the air. We'd love to hear from you. Our number is 310-861-2331. And this is On Cue. I'm your host, Eric Powell. We will be right back, and we have on our regular break.
Lead a people who are starved, who are broken, who are isolated.
We lead them where they are by getting them on cue with God's will, by getting them on cue with His calling on their lives. Let us help you get on cue.
Powerful is your leadership. Do people trust you? Would people follow you if you were not their boss, not their parent, not their sibling, not their commanding officer? Let us help you get on the queue.
I learned more about the heart of leadership than the art of leadership. What Eric Powell does in this session is makes the leader in you come alive.
Do you know your purpose? Let us help you get on cue.
It should be a mandatory part of every church pre-membership class, every school leadership program. I think this curriculum effectively used not only positions a person for better leadership, but positions a person for better life.
We're back. Thanks for staying with us. You're listening on cue. I'm your host, Eric Powell. Remember, our mission here is simple, friends, to help you leave where you are by getting you on cue with God's will and his purpose for you. So today's question, unaccompanied in America, oh, say can kids stay? We're talking about the almost 50,000 unaccompanied children coming from Central America to the U.S. Helping us with that question is our regular guest, the Smith Brothers, Nehemiah and Jock, who's always raising the consciousness on providing a voice to the world to those who are in need. So and before the break, Nehemiah and Jock, thanks for staying with us. We were talking, Nehemiah was making the point about how historically, if you're looking at events or situations or dealing with the people who've come here over a period of time, including us, on and by their own will or not or willingly, he's comparing it to slavery in a sense. And I shared before our show started that I'm starting this freedom series, and it starts in Galatians 5, and 5:1 said, it's for freedom that Christ has set us free, and stand firm then, and you're not let yourself be burdened again by the yoke of slavery. And that slavery, to your point, Nehemiah, can go to many things. It could be literally slavery. It could be those elements that John talked about from the pillars of society for dealing economically, socially, educationally, the basic needs of those kids who are the parents are sending them from. It could be the yoke of hypocrisy, as we talked about today. So let's take that for a second, Nehemiah, around the hope of the level of hypocrisy. There's one point of bringing and accepting these kids. There are also another point of we have orphan, parentless, leaderless kids in America today. Outside of that, how do we calibrate? How do we reconcile that? Nehemiah.
Well, first of all, I think that if someone is sending their child 2,500 miles, they must have a strong belief in God. They must believe that God will see that child through where they need to be. There has to be a strong faith in order for a parent to say, you know what, I'm going to send you to America. You're living in Ecuador, and you're gonna make it. You're gonna get there. But
absolutely, and that's essentially to the of what drove parents, and is that unbelievable faith that they're gonna get there, right?
Yeah, they're gonna get there. I believe you're gonna get there, and I believe that you're gonna be free, and I believe that all the things I've heard about America are true. I have the faith that if I might not think, and not to make light of it, I know I'm not going to get there with you, but you're going to get to the promised land, which is America.
Absolutely.
And yet these people, they have this jaded view of what America is because they've never been here. They're going by word of mouth, and they don't know that, you have a leaderless, parentless kids here, children here, but even in that, in that they are in this environment, even if they're in America, they still have what we call opportunity. And
absolutely.
Here are
kids, so outside of that stated view, the opportunity outweighs. What'd you say?
And here are kids that are coming, that are being sent because their parents have heard somewhere or from someone, or have seen it on the internet or the radio, or heard it on the radio, or read it in books, that this is some, you know, paradise. And leaving their conditions, it is a paradise.
Okay. Okay. So, John, what's your perspective on that? What about, you know, the whole notion of how we handle and manage our own orphan, parentless, and leaderless kids?
I mean, I think we struggle in that ourselves. I kind of beg to the notion of Nehemiah, and that I think a lot of the parents in these countries in Central America, they don't really realize that, or if they do realize that, then they are saying, like he said, that the opportunity is there to do better. They see their particular situations as being perilous. You know, if you stay here, you will perish, as opposed to taking the risk of peril for a much brighter future. The thing that we have to look at, though, is we kind of got to address, okay, what do we do about it? What are some models we can look at in trying to solve the problem? If we look at something here, there are if we look at most of the kids come from, I think it is El Salvador, Honduras, and Guatemala, but you know you have other countries in Central America, Belize, Costa Rica, and Panama. Okay.
Okay.
And so, you know, you look at, okay, why aren't we getting kids from these countries? Is there something that has happened there that has kept those families from sending their kids? If you look at Belize in particular, it is not as populous as some of these other small countries just like it. On top of that, Belize has also experienced the influx of Guatemala, Honduras, and Salvadoran kids. So, you know, we have to look at what we can do to maybe help these people not go in and do it for them, but help them to realize opportunities in their own countries. If that means and through their own culture, you know, not trying to force anything on them,
but trying to help them
realize.
Let me stop you right there. So the fact that we've gone down this run the path of the fact that these parents had unbelievable faith, dealing with unbelievable conditions that we haven't experienced, probably our forefathers have experienced, in order to find a way to secure the future of their kids, you would think that it'd be easy to just go to a neighboring country. But I guess I got to ask this question, and then also related to, you know, the notion of the jaded view. Do you feel that America still is a beacon of light for many folks, regardless of what,
anybody else
has done, but is it still the beacon of light? I have to go back to that question now, based upon comment and as well as stated view of what America is.
Of course it is. It's a beacon of light, because if it were not, the people wouldn't dare take that leap of faith to say, I'm going to send my child here to find opportunity. But we also have to look at, you know, I just believe that if we're saying to send us your huddle masters and all of that, And then they get here. Hey, we need to live up to that. And if we're going to reject anybody after that, then that's fine. But if they get here, don't just, you know, blanketly, you know, I think the Obama administration is saying that they're sending $250 million in aid to some of these countries. And I don't think it's a problem that you can just throw money at. I think, like Jock said, you have to be able to work with the countries to help them, you know, without impeding on their autonomy, and kind of infuse into their system this type of hope, a hope or opportunities that can help the people. You know, you have to do that, but I think that it's become very nasty, you know, how Americans are approaching the issue of immigration, especially with these children. I think it's very nasty. I think it's very mean-spirited. A lot of the people that are there, I'm not saying they speak for everyone, but the issue is that as an American people, as a people, we should find a way to help these people. If we're going to say it's going to be a cutoff, Eric, hey, it's a cutoff. If we're going to say, hey, you can be here for a certain time, we'll educate you, and we'll send you back home. Because an educated man has a better opportunity than an uneducated man.
Yep, and I agree with you on a lot of those points, and that's to your point earlier of why our parents and our once before stressed education and seeking a better way in order to really improve and lead our future generations in a sense. But I want to stop here for a second, though, and, you know, on one argument of going in and helping reconstruct, if you will, I'm using that term loosely, of what this nation is building. That's on one end of the spectrum. And there's two components. The other component is helping kids right now. What do you do right now? The other second phase is nation building. But if you come into the nation building piece, but the same folks would say that would also object to nation building in other places where we've gone in the Middle East or started a war or whatever the case is, or not started a war, but ultimately part of a war. But my point is that, you know,
right,
how do we balance that of where, you know, in one sense, we're saying, hey, we don't need to be involved in the nation's affairs and going and doing nation building. But on this case, what makes it different from any other nation building across the world? It's just not facetious, but I'm just trying to understand.
Well, first of all, what oil? Go ahead, John.
Eric.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
One thing is, I kind of mentioned it before in that, you know, when we go in, we have to take the approach that we are here to help you grow from your own cultural and social standpoint. Okay, we're not trying to change any. We're not trying to change your culture. We're not necessarily change your society, but we're trying to help you change your society in a positive way, right? This is not under the auspices of war, okay? We're not in a adversarial relationship with you from the beginning, so that way it doesn't feel like it's being forced down your throat.
Okay? Great point. So let's take that war piece for a second. In the midst of Independence Day, you know, I've heard and had conversation with vets all this past week. And they're not necessarily saying that they don't want to help the kids, but their point was this. They have military vets who are homeless and hungry, and we're not really moving forward and have a forefront of the newspapers and media of saying we need to help some of those vets. So how do we calibrate and reconcile that too?
Well, the way we calibrate and reconcile that is simple. We waste a lot of money in this country across the board, okay, and it's not being put, it's not being put or used in the proper way, and for the proper purposes. That's why we have homeless veterans. That's why we have homeless children. That's why we have whole uneducated sectors of our society and communities. You see what I'm saying? That's why our education system is lacking. It's
great,
because
great.
We waste a lot.
We waste. We do. So with that, before we go to the break, we got a question from the audience. So so caller, share your name and what state you're from. You're on cue.
Hi, I'm Kelly.
Hi, Kelly. What state are you calling from?
I'm calling from the great state of Texas.
The great state of Texas. Kelly, what's your question or comment?
My question is, I'm kind of torn about the situation. I have kids, and these kids, I know these parents are making a great sacrifice having to leave their kids, but what about our kids that are already here? What about the diseases, and what about, you know, these kids laying on concrete? What adults are going to tend to these kids? Who's going to foot the bill for these kids? But I know it's a terrible situation that they're coming from, but I'm two-sided.
You're two-sided. So Nehemiah and Jock, can you help Kelly with her question of, you know, how does she reconcile considering the needs of our kids in this nation versus those who are coming, and we're pouring our sources.
We have so many kids that need our help here. What are we doing for those kids?
Okay.
Well, I answer it simply, because I'm a minister, I said, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And so, what is it that you would have someone do if you were in the same situation? Would you want them to help your child? Would you want them to make sure that your child had somewhere to eat or something to eat and somewhere to stay and some clothes to wear and shoes for their feet?
I agree with that wholeheartedly. I'm a Christian, mm-hmm. and, you know, that old saying that my grandmother used to tell us, you know, you got to sweep around your own front door before you sweep around somebody else's too. So you got to take care of home first.
Well, I agree with that, but I'm not going to say that is wholly biblical. But I do know that, you know, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. I know that is biblical, and as a Christian, when we are dealing with this, we cannot. There can be no buts. We have to do as much on the home front as we have to do in humanitarian aid and to helping these people. Because when we stand before the judgment bar and we stand, God said, well, what did you do in this situation? Well, I was so concerned about my own folks that I didn't care really about what was going on over here, or I thought I needed to deal with this first before I dealt with that. I wouldn't want to be in that situation.
I agree, but what about the homeless kids that are here? Why are we helping? I mean, how are we helping these kids? It's not like we have a zero tolerance with our kids here. How can we help our kids, our homeless? We have tons of. There's a huge need. Huge.
Well, if we are Christians and if we are concerned about the whole human whole human condition, then there's no such thing as our. Our includes everyone.
It does. It really does. But I'm still torn. I still believe that there's a work here first.
Okay.
Once our work here is done, then we can reach abroad. Then we can reach out and help somebody. You're not going to feed somebody else's kids before you feed your own family.
Okay.
Well, great comments, Kelly, and appreciate. You know, one thing I would say is I agree, and from Nehemiah's perspective of do unto others as you have them do unto you. And the notion of really the sweep around your own front door, I've heard that as well. I think that's more related to judging somebody. And right now, you know, to the point of once we be really the true essence of our relationship with the Lord, and lots of times just my own personal opinion, is when you're in a situation, if it's where you're needing money or you're needing some help or so forth, able to extend that despite your condition. So I believe that's where Nehemiah is trying to lead us to. Nehemiah, if I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but ultimately that's where we head.
Again, I stated at the beginning, I'm two-sided on it. It's a sad situation. But, again, I do have my reservations about it. I thank you guys for your opinion and for listening to my questions. Y'all have a blessed evening.
Ellen, thank you.
You've
been great. Great question, right. Great comment.
Hey.
That was from Texas. So, Jock, you want to make a comment before we go to a break?
Yeah, I want to say one thing to Kelly, is that you, in a situation like this where you have kids that come from somewhere else, we got kids over here, you do what you can do right now for whoever you can do it for, okay? And the reason why I say it like that is because it takes into account of what Nehemiah said. Honor includes everybody. Now, for example, Nehemiah is not geographically located where he can go out and maybe see about these kids from these Central American countries, right? But what he does do is he addresses the needs of the kids in his environment that he can affect right now, okay, and feeding them, setting them up a feeding program. Okay, fine. I encourage you, Kelly, to do the same thing. Don't look at it as a us or them type of thing. Look at it as a collective unit and say, hey, how can I affect this collective unit right now? If it means, hey, I can help teach, help feed, some kids in my community, great. I'm all for it. That's the thing to do. If it means you can go down and help and teach and feed some of the kids from Central America, great. Because the reality of it is, as Christians, when we have to stand in front of the Lord and give an account, he's looking at us as a whole.
Yes, sir.
And so
as a whole, give an account.
Hey,
so we run up against the break and appreciate you sharing that with Kelly, and hopefully she's listening and finding a way to serve at the end of the day. So when we come back, we'll continue our dialogue with the Smith brothers, and our question of the day is unaccompanied in America. Oh, say, can kids stay? So during the break, feel free to give us a call at 310-861-2331. This is On Cue. I'm your host, Eric Powell. We'll be right back after the rendition of the Star-Spangled Banner from some girls at a Texas Tech game this past year.
Do you know God has called you? Do you know your purpose? Let us help you get on cue. How do you lead a people who are starved, who are broken, who are desperate?
You lead them where they are. By getting them on cue for God's will, by getting them on cue for this calling on their lives. Let us help you get on cue.
Who is your leadership? Do people trust you? Would people follow you if you were not their boss, not their parent, not their sibling, not their commanding officer? Let us help you get on cue.
And And we're back. Thanks for staying with us and listening to On Cue. I'm your host, Eric Powell. Remember, our mission here is simple, friends, to help you leave where you are by getting you on cue with God's will. So today's question of the day, unaccompanied in America, oh, say can kids stay? We've had such a great dialogue with our regular guest, the Smith Brothers, who's always raising the consciousness of the places where they've been and the people who are influenced and providing a voice to those who need it. So Jock and Nehemiah, thanks for staying with us for the break. We're really talking about, from the biblical sense, Nehemiah, with our last call, Kelly, and to the great point, it is the answer to a question, I think the answer for all our questions, the do unto others as they have them do unto you, you know. And I think I heard that probably every day of my life from my mother, and that is so, so true. You know, Nehemiah, you started earlier, you outlined what Christ said about the children in Matthew 15. What does the word say about such a thing? If there's just one thing, is it that Matthew 15, or is it something that you can stick to the ribs of whoever's listening about this whole immigration or dealing with kids or dealing with people who come into a new nation?
Well, it's Matthew 18 and Matthew 19. If you go through those two chapters, Matthew 18 and 19, you will see Christ is trying to teach the lesson that unless you humble yourself as a child, you cannot enter into the kingdom of heaven. He actually used actual children to get across that point. But I was also listening to one of my favorite songs. Says, I dare not trust the sweetest frame, but wholly lean on Jesus' name. On Christ, the solid rock I stand. All other ground is sinking sand.
Mm-hmm.
It says, I dare not trust the sweetest frame. The sweetest frame is they are illegal and they shouldn't be here. This is our country. We have to keep them out. That's the sweetest frame, because the sweetest frame would have you think that this is somehow some devilish attack on your country, when in essence it is a test of our country. How is it that we will treat the least of these? How is it that we will treat those people who we know are in a bad situation, who we know are looking for freedom, who we know are hungry, who we know are naked, who we know are uneducated, who we know are disenfranchised? How is it that you're going to treat these, America? How is it that you're going to treat these Americans? Because you've been there before. You've been where these people are. Some of you have been where these folk are. So what are you going to do now? Sometimes we look at things as a detriment, and it's no more than a test. What happened to the woman that said, Christ, I want you to come by my house?
Mm.
And he came by three times, but she didn't recognize him when he was the hungry man. When he was the man that was next, she didn't recognize him. When she saw him again, she said to him, you lied to me. You said that you were coming back. And he explained that I did.
I did.
You came about three times, and you turned me away every time. And so we need to be careful if we call ourselves Christians, if we call ourselves a Judeo-Christian nation, we need to be careful with how we treat God's folk.
How we treat God's folk.
Because guess what? Because God's law supersedes anything that man has put in place.
Amen to that.
And God said, clothe the naked, feed the hungry, comfort the widow. That's what the Lord said. Now, guess what? Man will say, look, send them down there to social services, and social services will help them. But that ain't what the word said.
That ain't what the word said.
So we better be careful with how we treat God's folk.
Amen to that. Jock, your perspective on Nehemiah brings up a great point. It is about not really understanding how we're going to treat God's people. And lots of times we don't know, as the ladies didn't know when Christ came to her door three times. And there are instances in the word where a child have been sent or traded, a soul, to a foreign land, and the Lord used this for a greater purpose, you know, from Moses to Joseph, and even our Christ, our Savior. Can you talk about that and connect Nehemiah's point of of really making sure we treat people the way we need to be treated?
Well, I mean, so I guess Christ's commandment to us is to love one another.
Yes, sir.
Okay. And hi.
Go ahead.
Hello.
No, go ahead. You're on.
And so what happens is, and I want to kind of pick up a point of what Nehemiah said and kind of bring it together there is that the law. I think a lot of us are we want to just look at the law. And the writer of Acts and Romans, I think, describes what happens when you only try to follow the law of the land. A lot of people think that, hey, if I just follow the law, if we just follow the law, I will have, I'm going to be seen as righteous in the eyes of men and the eyes of God. But what you start to realize is that, you know, you can't be righteous in the eyes of God, especially by following the law, because the law is going to cause you to go against God in some areas, okay? And you only gain that through, you only gain God's favor through his grace, okay?
Yes.
And so if he's telling you to love thy neighbor or to love everyone, that doesn't necessarily mean that you have to agree with everyone, but that does mean that you have to love everyone's life to be committed. And what love means is to be committed to ensuring that that person, okay, has the opportunity in their life to experience the Lord. And you cannot deny them that. Okay, you have to be committed to that. And in this case, that means you have to be committed to ensuring their safety, ensuring their well-being, and ensuring that they possess an opportunity equal to anyone else.
That's what we have to do. To your point, following the law, this legalistic, is always the question. I think we've talked about this over the years, and I talk about it all the time in Q Leadership, is what's higher, the sovereignty of legalistic society, the law, versus the sovereignty of God. And that's something that we all need to make sure we're aware of when we go into the ballot box or when we're dealing with social issues of the day, because as to your point, a condition for accepting God, you know, it's really outside of divine favor. You can't necessarily gain God's favor by observing a law or something. To what I said earlier, being burdened again by the yoke of slavery, no matter what that is, and it can be a law as well, not only just our whole sentiment about kids coming across the border. So I ask both of you, and it's probably pretty clear so far, though. Should Lady Liberty lift her lamp beside that golden door? In other words, let them stay or send them back. What's your answer?
The ones that are here, I think mm-hmm. that we should, and the ones that get through or slip through, you know, I think that we should do everything in our earthly abilities to try to help them here.
So hold on. So you're saying the ones that are here and ones that are mm-hmm. you saying that includes the ones that are still to come and as well as those who remain?
Well, what I'm saying is if here's what we should do. It's a three-pronged approach. It's not just the ones that are here. And I said this from the beginning. We have to think about those who are still in these countries, those who are on the journey here, and those that are already here. Those that are already here, we got to do whatever is in our power to help them, to maybe educate them or whatever, and reunite them with their families. Those that are on the journey here, that's a treacherous journey. We have to do something to protect them, and either if we don't want to bring them here, then we got to do something to, you know, in conjunction with Mexico and their home countries to say, hey, we got to protect these kids in some way. We got to set up some kind of monitoring system to on this route that they're taking to make sure that they're not taking advantage of, their innocence isn't destroyed, and maybe we can return them home in a better situation. For those that are still in those countries, we have to work with those nations to say, okay, how can we help you to bring your society's needs up to par to where your parents, the parents in your country, don't think that this is a perilous environment. So it's a three-pronged approach. We got to do something in all three areas.
All three areas. The ones that are here, the ones that are on the journey, and the ones that are yet to be on the journey. Nehemiah, anything you would add to that?
Yeah, I would say that the ones that are here and that have made, you know, that they have completed that journey of faith, I think that they should be able to get an education. I think that we should feed them because they're hungry. I think we should clothe them, not only physically clothe them, but we should intellectually clothe them, because once we get that educated man or woman, and we send them back to Ecuador, we send them back to El Salvador, and we send them back, they go back equipped with something that they didn't have before they got here. Now they can say, now you're building friendships, you're building relationships. It's a relationship building opportunity, because now they can go back, and instead of the corrupt leader that is doing whatever, you have someone that you have trained that kind of can understand how the world works, and that can say, you know what, America gave me an opportunity. I'm a friend to America. I'm going to get into Peruvian politics. I'm going to get into El Salvadorian politics, and I'm going to do it within the context of El Salvador, but with a different worldview. I'm an educated man. I'm an educated woman, and I'm going to help bring my people up, so that now they don't have to make the treacherous trek that I made. Because you got to look at it like this, Eric. We don't have to make the treacherous trek that Harriet Tubman made. She made it for us. But guess what? Now we are equipped. We are equipped to be better people, to do better things, to do greater things. And that is her salvation. That is her salvation. That is her redemption. That is everything that she wanted. She was doing it, yes, for the people at the moment, but she was doing it for generations to come. And that's what we have to help these people do. Hey, educate them, feed them, send them back home, so that now they have a greater opportunity to make a bigger difference in the country that they're from.
So we were their purpose. It counts to you. We started with the show where you talked about what freedom was, is the ability to express your skills in such a way that's constructive to the greater good. It's using your experiences for the collective, Nehemiah. You brought in the Lord Jesus and showed us, gave us the blueprint. So essentially, to wrap it up, Jock's point is we have to deal with who's in the country, who's on that journey. Also, thirdly, those who are still there, and go back in order to equip those leaders in order to create that blueprint. Create that blueprint in order to lift those who still remain. So, brothers, I really thank you, both of you, for coming in tonight. And we're gonna close out the show. We run up against time, but we've definitely been blessed to have you once again. And I appreciate your short notice of coming in and really sharing some words of wisdom and joy to our audience.
Oh yeah, no problem. Glad
you're welcome.
So, ladies and gentlemen, that was friends. That was the Smith brothers. We appreciate them coming in, and so we kicked off the show with some words ascribe in the Statue of Liberty. Give us your tired, your poor, Your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send these, the homeless, the tempest tossed to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door. You know, our question of the day is related to the unaccompanied America. Can kids stay? Of course, we were playing on the words of the Star-Spangled Banner. The key to the question lies, as Nehemiah and Jock articulated, but it also lies in what Francis Scott Key wrote in the last stanza of the national anthem. So I would bet all of us, anybody who knew the last stanza, I definitely don't. We all know the first. But it goes like this. Oh, thus be it forever when freedmen shall stand between their loved home and what the war's desolation. Blessed the victory and peace, may heaven rescued land. Praise the power that had made preserve us a nation. Then conquer we must when our cause is just. And this be our motto, in God we trust. And the star-spangled banner and triumph shall wave over the land of the free and home of the brave. I want to focus on three parts in there. Bless the victory and peace, may the heaven-rescued land. Heaven-rescued land, key point in that. The second is praise the power that had made and preserved us a nation. Essentially saying praise due to God for preserving us a nation. And to this, our motto, in God we trust, to honor him, our motto is to be God and trust. The question is valid today, but the larger question it really remains is, in God we trust. Nehemiah and Jock talked about the sovereignty of what's higher, the law or sovereignty of God. We always got to ask ourselves that question. You know, but also we're talking about things, what the word says about immigration. In Leviticus 19, it said, when a stranger sojourns with you in your land, you shall not do him wrong. You shall treat that stranger who sojourns with you as a native among you, and you shall love him as yourself, and for you were strangers in the land of Egypt, and I am the Lord your God. And so essentially that applies to us as well. But what does the word say about children being sent and traded and sold to a foreign land or used in such a way for a larger purpose? Moses was left in the basket in the bushes in the Nile in the Egypt and goes on to free the people. Joseph was sold into slavery because of jealousy from his brothers and saved the nation. Jesus, our Christ, our Savior, was born into this damn world and saved us. So when we think about the lower perspective, Nehemiah shared earlier about Matthew 18 and 19, but also if you look in Matthew 25, when Jesus talked about when, here's what he shared, when the Son of Man comes in his glory and the angels are all with him, he will sit at his glorious throne. Before him will be gathered all the nations. He will separate people from one another as shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. He will place the sheep on his right and the goats on the left, and the king will say to those on the right, come, who are blessed by my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you for the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you welcomed me. I was naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me, and I was when I was in prison, and you came to me. Then the righteous one would answer and say, Lord, when did you see me? When did we see you hungry, or feed you, or thirsty, or give you drink? Or when did we see you a stranger and welcome you, or naked and clothe you? And when did we see you sick or in prison and visited you? And the king will answer, truly I say to you, as you did it for the least of my brothers, you did it for me. That's it, folks. This is the true essence of freedom, choosing to do for the least of these. So the question of the day, unaccompanied America, oh, can kids stay? You answer it. When you make it, please test your answer against that. Test your answer of being on cue what the Lord has told us in that passage. And so with that, this has been On Cue. I'm your host, Eric Powell, and Kennedy will close us out.
Before we go, I would like to thank our special guests, Nehemiah Smith and Jock Smith. I have an ask for all of you. Like us on Facebook at OnCue Radio and follow us on Twitter at Cue Leadership. Put us on your prayer list. Invite a friend to listen to this show and to next week's show. Consider Cue Leadership curriculum and training for your church, home, or company. If you would like to be a sponsor, please email us at OnCue@leadership.com. There are a few thanks. We give all honor and praise to Jesus Christ, our Savior. Thanks to those who tune in. My dad would love to thank his producer assistant, me. My dad's better half, his best friend, his wife, my mom, Ty, my little sister, Carson, my family, mom, sisters, and brothers, friends in Facebook and in life. We dedicate the show to leaders in this nation with hope of making the right decision. This has been On Cue Radio. Until next week.
How do you lead a people who are starved, who are broken, who are isolated?
You lead them where they are, by getting them on cue for God's will, by getting them on cue with His calling on their lives. Let us help you get on cue.
How powerful is your leadership? Do people trust you? Would people follow you if you were not their boss, not their parent, not their sibling, not their commanding officer? Let us help you get on cue.
Let us help you get on cue.